The Raven and the Blues across the world, and the first live session for a long, long time. A joy to welcome somebody who I've seen working on a couple of occasions and last worked with a couple of weeks ago for a special concert for Joe Harmon. That's Mike Ross.
Hello,
Mike.
Dave. Hi, Dave.
In different incarnations, you're all over the place at present, well, aren't you?
Yeah.
We were saying as we were setting up and things, that's because the way the business is now, really, you really have to be everywhere in a sense to make any money at all, don't you?
Well, you know, yeah, that's the truth. I consider myself to be, to put it in blunt terms, a self-employed musician. So, you know, if you see a self-employed jobbing gardener going, well, I only cut grass. You know, I don't do trees because I haven't got the right gear. And then he's missing out on a load of work, you know.
Yeah.
So that's the reality of it is. For too many years, I sat back going, I can't work because I can't do the kind of work that I want to do.
Right.
So I didn't get any work. So, I opened it out and I went, well, what work is there? And I went, actually, do you know what? There's loads.
Mm.
You've just got to be willing to be a bit flexible.
And also learn a lot of new things along the way, which you have done, of course,
yeah,
as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you know, I mean, the things that I do, most important is my own band, the Mike Ross Band.
Yeah.
You know, my career, I write the songs, I do all the stuff, and that's my thing. Now, we're doing pretty well. 2.5 years since I relaunched that ship, and it's picking up a lot of momentum, you know. Off the back of that, I ended up working with Roscoe in Walrus, which is great because it's fun being in a band. You know, it's a bit like a gang, whereas a solo project, you know, you get to call the shots, but it's not exactly the same kind of environment. So it's good. A collaboration's good.
We'll come to Walrus a bit later on.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does. I mean, but there are lots of band leaders, if you know what I mean, in Walrus. So is it a sort of consortium or are you the leader?
No, Roscoe's the leader. It's Roscoe's thing.
Yeah.
It's the only thing that Roscoe does apart from his pick-up gigs and bits and pieces. So I'm quite content to just shut up and play the guitar on that. And that's kind of why I'm in it.
Yeah.
Because after a good, long, hard day of, you know, cajoling people into getting my Ross Band gigs and really working at it, it's quite nice to just rock up and play some riffs, you know.
Mm.
So that's that thing. And then I do, you know, so the solo stuff that I do is all in support of my own band, the Mike Ross Band stuff. And you know, it's been great in getting in door and foot in the door of some of the festivals and some of the venues where they won't take a chance on a band until they've seen what you can do. You know? So I come out with my solo set and then go back with the band. And that's been working okay.
Which is what you're doing this weekend, this coming weekend, isn't it?
No, the band, it's all band stuff this weekend.
It's all band stuff.
Yeah. Actually, I mean, I have done, earlier in the year, I did quite a lot of solo stuff. It's not acoustic as such, because I tend to take an amp and it's kind of gritty, rough and ready sort of Jimmy Reed kind of guitar sound, you know, loads of reverb and tremolo. But no, this weekend is all Colne, two Mike Ross Band gigs and one Walrus gig.
Yeah.
So tomorrow night I'm playing in Camden, Blues Kitchen. That's a solo.
Yeah.
And then I have the band going in there in December. So,
right.
You know. Mm. But really, you know, if you come see me solo or you come see me with the band, you'll see at least some of the same songs. You might not recognise them, but the words will be the same, you know. And then I do a bit of collaborating, mainly because firstly, because I enjoy it.
Yeah.
And secondly, because I'm available. So Amanda St. John came over it earlier in the year. We'd met last year at Blues on the Farm through a mutual friend of ours. And then we were talking on Facebook and she was complaining about how expensive it was to bring her band over. And I said, well, I'll help you out.
Yeah.
You know, I can do that. And I can, it's not, you know, and we had fun, did a little tour with her. And then, you know, we were just talking about Wiley Bo Walker. I've just played a bunch of guitars on his new album. There's some other stuff as well.
Yeah.
And then Jack Hutchinson, we're good friends, you know. One of the things that I found has been best about this scene of, you know, British blues rock, if you like, is there are people on there that like the same stuff as me.
Yeah.
You know, so it's been great to team up with them a little bit.
It's also, as far as I can see, compared with some other genres, it's also a lot friendlier too.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I think there's still a fair bit of backbiting and ankle biting. and backstabbing and general, you know, yeah, bitchiness. But and I won't say I haven't done that myself, you know, when I was younger or when I was working less or whatever. But I'm, you know, I made a conscious decision about 4 years ago to kind of stop being like that,
yeah,
and to be open and to be friendly and to be honest. And you know what? All the stuff that I like, I mean, the music that I'm most comfortable with and happy in is the music that starts in about 1966 and it finishes in about 1974. Right now, and that comes, so if you can, you know, over here it starts maybe with Revolver,
yeah,
and it probably finishes with Goat's Head Soup,
right
by the Stones, and then in America it's Stax Records and all that, yes, kind of stuff. And if you look at them, they're all mates,
yeah.
So Hendrix was mates with Clapton, mm, they are friends with, you know, Stevie Winwood. And if you used to go to the clubs here back in the day, they'd all be on the stage jam, yeah, at the end of the night. They weren't bitching,
no,
because they were busy. They were too busy to be bitching about each other. They were off, up and down all over the place. Now, I'm having a similar experience to that now with people like Roscoe and Jack, Troy Redfern, you know, all these other people, because we're busy. We're out and going at it. Mm. I think it's the stay-at-homes that tend to do, yeah, the most carping.
Yes. Facebook warriors.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, you know.
Let's forget Facebook. Mm-hmm. Let's have some music. What are you going to do, right, for us first?
Well, this song is, I play this a lot in my solo set, and it's called Don't Worry Baby, Just Call One. It's from my first solo album, Spindrift.
Been loving, she's got a heavy heart. She's been ill, but she don't show it. It's been wrong, and don't I know it? I said, don't worry, baby, you just call. Lord knows I tried, and I said my piece. I've been wrong, and did I know it? I've been mad, and did I show it? I said, now don't worry, babe, you just call. I'm through with sitting on my pride, how about you? I miss the day I left you lonely. I miss the truth, and that's why it's making it so hard. So won't you stamp your feet and shake your sorry head? See, you got your reasons, and that's okay. That there's a love that we both know it, and if we want to, we can show it. I said, don't worry, baby, you just call. You, I miss the day I left you lonely. I miss the truth, and that's what's making it so hard. So won't you stamp your feet and shake your sorry head? See, you got your reasons, and that's okay. That there's a love that we both know it. If we want to, we can show it. I said, don't worry, babe, just call. I said, don't worry, baby, you just call. I said, don't worry, baby, you just call.
That's lovely. Written when, did you say?
It's quite an old song, that one, actually. It's got to be... well, I hadn't moved south. That's how old that song is. I had not moved out, so that would be probably early part of 2000.
Right.
But it went away for a long time and just matured.
Yeah,
you know,
the songs do, yeah.
Yeah, in an oak cask, like a fine brandy.
Which begged the question, superb link there, because that was going to be my next question to you, is what brought you south? What made you decide to leave the Northeast?
Women. A woman, a very specific woman
you
who that in, song was written about.
Oh, you fell in love, happens. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, well, I don't know if I'm going to call it love. But, well, you know, I don't usually tell that story, and I hope my wife isn't listening to this, because I haven't told her. But I came down south. That was the catalyst. That was the thing. But, you know, I grew up in Durham, which is a lovely place to come from. You know, and
do you mean Durham the town or Durham the county?
Durham the city.
Durham,
yeah.
The city.
Durham,
yeah.
In and around Durham city.
Okay.
For the first 25 years of my life. As I say, a great place to come from. Really warm place, you know, friendly people.
Teacher but, training college.
Yeah, there is a teacher. Yeah, what's it called? I can't think what it's called, but there is one.
I said that because that was one of the big draws for Durham for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know whether it was still there by the time.
Well, I think it was. Yeah. I don't know if it's still there now, but yeah. It was, you know, cathedral and castle was the, yeah. is the things there. Great cathedral.
Mm.
But had a friend called Dave who was a piano player who we'd worked with a few times, and he'd moved away from Durham the year before, and I gave him a lift, and he came down here. He stayed in Crawley originally. Croydon, and then he went to Brighton for the day and never came back, and then he'd been down a few months, and I went down and I thought, bloody hell, it's brilliant down here, it's much better than Durham, it's got a cold, it's, you know, there's the pier, and you know, it was
just,
it's a great place,
yes,
for young people, you know, young single people. So I met this girl, and so, you know, that kind of was the catalyst, although actually we'd already broken up by the time I moved down,
right?
So, you know, she kind of very quickly faded off, you know. And then, yeah, so that's how it came about.
So, a teenage years growing up in the northeast of England, with all the legacies of Free and all the bands that were there and the things that happened up there. And that obviously influenced and gave you your kind of blues rock roots, I suppose. Mm-hmm.
Well, my dad's record collection
was the
one, and my mum's, but my dad was into more rock, I think. But yeah, my dad was exactly the right age, and my dad went to see Free play in Dunelm.
Yeah.
You know, when Paul was too wasted to get up and play guitar.
Yes.
And so Paul Rogers and Andy played a set on the piano.
Yeah.
And then he went, look, we're sorry, we can't continue because Paul's out of it. Mm. You know, my dad was there. So he had them records, the Stones and Bitter Free and that, and the Beatles, obviously.
I think perhaps we should break in here, because for the many American listeners who know the band Free but don't realise the fact that in a very small area of the northeast of England, really south of Newcastle is counted only just, but Sunderland and Durham and that area around there was where people discovered Free, first of all, and they were like appearing there every weekend one way and the other, and so,
well,
yeah.
Well, Paul's a smoggy, isn't he? So
yeah.
He comes from Middlesbrough. If you, and again, for our transatlantic friends, if you're from Middlesbrough, then you get called a smoggy.
Yeah.
Because there's a huge chemical plant there called ICI Wilton, and it remains there. In fact, you know, in latter years when I used to drive around up there, and you'd be driving around listening to TFM, and they'd go, there's been a bit of a chemical spillage in at Wilton. There's nothing to worry about, but we've closed all the schools, and if you could just stay in the house and keep your doors and windows closed. You know? So that still happens now, because friends of mine still live up there. But that's where Paul was from, and the band, obviously it was a London-based band, the other guys, but they would come up and play a lot of the Working Men's Club and the Cellar Club in Shields,
yeah,
and Kirk Levington Country Club, and these were classic venues. And you know what? When I came up 20 years later, it seemed like so long ago that these bands were playing there, because Hendrix had played these and Cream had used to play these gigs, and we were like, wow, back in the old days when they played them. And now it's like more than twice as many years since that's
scary
gone.
Yeah.
So I came up playing that, and the first band I was in was in Darlington, and they were a blues rock cover band, and I was 16, and I had a Les Paul and two AC30s, and I used to get the bus
with your AC.
With me. Well, with the first, I did it once with two AC30s, and I didn't do it again. And we used to get, I used to get the bus to Darling and get picked up, and I was 16 and the youngest other guy was 26, and they used to range, they ranged from about 26 to 40. So one of the guys in the band, the drummer, had been in a band at the time when Paul and them were playing, you know. So I had a bit of that heritage, but it's the only kind of music that ever made any sense, was roots based, blues based, roots based music. And then I did a bit of experimenting, you know, and I got like the cream of Eric Clapton and then R. Johnson.
Yes.
So I went to W.H. Smith's in Durham City and I found a greatest hits of Robert Johnson cassette, and I bought it and I got it home and it was snapped. And I had to take it back, and it was years before I heard him, you know. But I was listening to B.B. King of the Regal, and I was listening to, you know, Indianola Mississippi Seeds and just, you know, that kind of stuff. And it just got in, really, just went in the blood. And I was playing in rock bands, as we all do. But I always had this kind of much stronger linkage back to where I've always been interested in where stuff comes from. So I would listen to Library of Congress, Field Chants, recorded by Alan Lomax, you know. And I'd nick the words. You know, I could give you an example. Dollar Mammy, you know that song? Dollar Mammy, that's a field chant, you know. Rosie. Well, there's this Rosie, I've been doing Rosie for years, from a Duffy Power album. And then if you've ever come across Duffy Power,
I have,
he's South Londoner. And that, you know, I was given an album of his, and he played, John McLaughlin played on that record, and Jack Bruce played on that record, Phil Seaman played on that record. Because they were the jobbing musicians of 1965 in this era.
Well, you are now, that's
Yeah. So, you know, I had always had that interest in things, but there wasn't really any kind of defined scene to be able to do it, you know. So I always had it in me, but I didn't always let it out.
Mm. How often do you go back to the Northeast?
Not so often. Mm. My mum and dad moved down. After I moved down in 2000. They moved down in 2005.
Right.
So I used to go back a bit before then, but I actually went back in June. I went and played Durham Blues Festival, which was it was really nice, a real home. I'm filling up a bit, I remember. It's interesting because it was in the, I think it's called the Gala Theatre. Yes, it is the Gala Theatre. But when I left, it was a car park.
Right.
And it wasn't a particularly nice car park. There was a little fella in a hat at the company who's paid £2 to park all day. Well, now it's a multi-million pound
development,
you know, right near the bottom, just the bottom of the hill next to the marketplace. And I played in there, and I could see just about from where I was sitting on this stage. It was a big open kind of top floor of this place. I could see to the round the corner to where the hospital was, where I was born.
Right.
And the viaduct runs across Durham, it bisects the whole town, you know, so that's there. I could see the cathedral, I could see the castle, I could see where I used to work, and I could see where I used to live. You know, and it was such a homecoming. And, the crowd there were amazing because there was never any doubt that I was going to have them from the first word, you know. hello, you know. And we played a great set there. And so that was the first time I'd played in the city for about 17 years, you know. Although I have been back, and I'm going back in October. I'm playing, not Durham, but Middlesbrough, Stockton, Darlington. Mm. Played a lot of gigs in Darlow.
Yeah.
A lot of gigs in Darlow. Big music scene to this day in Darlington. Mm. So.
Talking of music.
Mm-hmm.
Track two, what are you going to do?
Track two. Well, I'm going to play... The last song I played you was Don't Worry Baby, Just Call One. And this is Don't Worry Baby, Just Call Two. Now, and I'm going to play it a bit differently because I brought this slide guitar today. And I've never played it like how I'm intending to play it. Except just now when I was tuning up.
Right.
It's not really connected to the first song. It's not really connected, it just has a similar theme, whereas the first one's a bit more kind of persuasive.
Yes.
This one is less so, isn't it? I wouldn't say it's less persuasive, but it's a bit more plaintive. I don't know. So, well, let's see how this goes. First time just for you, Dave. Cowboy should dirty boots, old blue jeans. What a sight I must look in this thing. I don't mean to bore you when I often ignore you, when I drift out of prominent view.
isn't directed at you. I said, don't worry, babe, just call. For you I'd do anything at all. Whatever I've been and whatever I'd seen, I said, don't worry, babe, just call. Spinning head, frozen nose, winter blue. Won't you save me from some of these things that I do? Isn't it crazy to ask you to save me? Know that I'm drowning down here with my fear. It would be nice to have somebody near. And I said, don't worry, baby, just call. For you I'm gonna do anything at all. Whatever I've been and whatever I'd seen, I said, don't worry, babe, just call. Trouble calls, missing word. Tell me, don't you find the whole damn mess absurd? 'Cause I want you to ask me not to attack me. And don't want to argue the talk. And I am sick of addressing the cause. And I said, don't worry, baby, just call. For you I'm gonna do anything at all. Wherever I've been, wherever I'd sin, whatever you know, you think that you know, whatever I think, I said, don't worry, baby, just call.
Just Call version 2, I guess. Is the next track Just Call version 3? Or does
it, wait, no, that's it now. There's only two. There's only two, don't worry, babies.
Right. You seem remarkably together in the sense that you seem to know exactly what your plans are and how you're doing, or are you just kind of rolling with it? Which is it?
Well, a bit of both. A bit of both. I, you know this story, but I'll tell it for the listeners. It was 2.5 years ago, and my mate Stevie Watts, who plays organ, who I'd had a little bit of a dalliance with in his organ trio when I was playing guitar for him, put me forward for a couple of Joe Harmon support gigs.
Oh yeah,
at a couple of theatres. Somebody had pulled out. So the support, whoever was booked to support, couldn't do it. So I got chatting with Joe's manager, Mark Ead, and he said, "Yeah, come out and do them. Get some CDs done and la da 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 da." And I'd been looking for a way to start playing some gigs that didn't involve just playing covers in pubs, because it seemed to be my only access. I couldn't find my way out of that, you know, which is. And I'd had quite a long break, really, from doing any kind of original music. So anyway, I had a bunch of CDs made up just on the cheap. from a friend of a friend. He knocked them together, and I went off and did these gigs, and I sold a load of these CDs, and I got a really positive response. So I kind of sat with my... She wasn't my wife then. She was my partner, Jenny. And I said, I'm going to give it a go. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to give it 5 years. And I'm just going to say yes to this, and I'm going to say yes to that, and I'm going to try not saying no to anything for 2 years. And that was 2.5 years ago. So I'm kind of got the confidence of going, I'm just going to say yes to this. Mm. Is that available? Well, I'm going to do that. I'm going to chase that down and do it, you know. And I've met some really supportive people. Fiona Long from Catfish has been booking some gigs for me. You know, she's been great. Mark Ead was very helpful. My band, brilliant. You know, Stevie Watts has been great. Joe Harmon, you know, meeting Roscoe, meeting Jack, various other people whose names I'll forget, and they'll vilify me. But there's, you know, Murray Stewart and Al Stewart from Blues in Britain, Christine and Tony Moore, you know, they're all on my side because I talk like them, which is great.
It doesn't always work that way.
No, it doesn't always work that way. But you know, so it's been quite supportive. It's good that you think I look together, because inside I'm a bit like one of your ducks out there. Yeah. You know, I'm like, yeah, I'm cool, I'm good, I'm doing it underneath. I'm like, Jesus, this is hard work, you know, because it is. You know, it is hard. I know that's a bit of a cliche, isn't it? People looking at us having a great time on stage, thinking, what is a hard time about that? And it's the insecurity of knowing if you're not going to get paid, if the gig's going to get cancelled, how you're going to be able to afford to repair the van, you know, where the next money's going to come from for the next record. There's a lot of insecurity in it, because there's no support for it. It's all self done. Everything that I've got today in my musical career, it was not handed to me on a plate, you know. The talent part of playing and singing and being able to write a song, it's not really that is, you know, that does not guarantee you admission to the bloody table. No. You know, what that gets you is you have to be so good at that you don't have to practice it, and you spend every waking hour doing the rest of it, the admin. You know, and time management, you know, one of them things that I didn't have any interest for when I was in my 20s. I don't need any of that because I'm a star.
I'm a musician. Yeah, an artist.
I'm going to get out of all of that. Well, it's actually, that's... Oh, well, folks, that's the stuff.
that's the stuff that pays the money. You know? Yeah.
Being organised enough to be able to, you know, have a family, have a musical career, you know, be able to pay a mortgage, to be able to write, to be able to do all this other stuff. It is tough, but, you know, I made a plan. The first plan I ever had that was like more than maybe 24 hours, you know, was that I was going to do this, and I was going to do this, and did it, and counted this time from there, and I made one record. And I'm ready to start finishing off the songs for the next record that I'm not even going to attempt to record till about next April. You know, because I want to be ahead of the curve. I want to be able to call the shots on how I want it to come out. And I can't do that if I go in at the last minute without a clear idea of what I want. And I learned that from previous experience.
So in terms of the plan kind of for the future... there's obviously the band is the big thing, is it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then whatever else comes along, you're happy to sort of pick along.
Well, I'm going to streamline from now, basically, you know. So there's a limit to how much one person can say yes to and continue to be married, you know, or continue to be able to make a living. Because none of this is especially profitable, you know. Mm. And I put everything back in, so time, money, energy. So really, the last couple of years of doing this solo stuff, I kind of said to myself that I'm not going to do any more solo stuff in the UK next year. I've got some stuff coming up in Europe next year where I'm either going out solo or I'm going out to work with a band. There's some Russian stuff and some other bits and pieces, Scandinavia. But really... I think we're at the point now where I can actually afford to take the band places, you know. Next year's not completely booked up, but there are some good old clumps of activity around, say, a Saturday night in a blues club. I'm playing Saltburn Blues Club, for example, next April, and that's on the Saturday. But then I've got like the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, play there on a Saturday, and then Bedford on the way home kind of thing. Yeah. So that's where I'm at now,
rather than, you know, 2 hours striking distance night after night. Because then it makes it more, you come home with a chunk of money, you go out, you come home, you know, we're going to give that a try.
It seems to be the way that more and more people are trying to do it. You get a nice looking gig and then you just literally say, what can I do nearby? Mm-hmm. And then eventually you get like a mini tour, which makes a lot of sense.
Which is, you know, it's practical in our modern lives. It kind of makes sense. So more and more of them and less of the kind of make work gigs or the, I mean, I hate turning work down, but, you know, I still play pubs and I'm still quite great and I'm still very grateful for the work.
Yeah.
But, you know, it comes a point whereby I'm putting in as much energy for this. I'm putting in too much energy for this.
Yes.
It's like it's taking too much out of the rest of what I've got to offer elsewhere, you know.
I know exactly what I was exactly the same right through the 70s. And my agent in the Northeast, Ivan Birchall, said, you'll burn yourself out, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I said, well, I can't turn down work. You know, I'd rather work 7 nights than six. Mm-hmm. And in the end, he sort of forced me to do it, you know. But yes, you have to learn to say no.
Yeah. Well, you know, this isn't the only way. This isn't the only thing that I do to earn money, you know, and just as bloody well. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing it at all. So I have to kind of, you know, I'm very lucky in that I'm at a point in my life where, I'm, you know, I've got a bit of flexibility in my other work and in my marriage and this and that, you know, to be able to include all of this stuff, but it has to be developing.
Is the time amongst all of this for writing still?
Well, yeah. I've, as I mentioned a bit earlier, actually, for about the last, my last album, Jenny's Place, came out April last year.
Is it as long ago as that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a year.
Because when I played a track on the last weekend's show, I said it was from the end of last year, but I hadn't realised it was just over a year ago,
Yeah, it was. But, I mean, we called it a soft launch because we didn't, you know, because it's got legs. It's, you know, it all sounds like it's recorded in 1971, so it's not going to go out of style, you know. So that album was written in the early part of 2015. Mm-hmm. And we recorded that up till about, well, it was the summer. We did a couple of days in the studio, and then I did a lot of stuff in my little studio, and then we brought all that together, and it was mixed by, the end of 2015. Because I was on Christmas Day, I started working on the artwork. Because, you know, what else are you going to do after you've had your lunch on Christmas
That's
Day?
That's right, yeah.
That's when I started putting the artwork together. And I had finished all versions of all the audio then. Mm. So then, since then, and actually including a lot of stuff that I had been writing through that process that didn't get finished, didn't get looked at, didn't get used, I've got quite a lot of demos of music and a lot of lyrics I write prolifically, but not to a plan. I'll be sitting in the van when I finished here, when I go out of here, and I'll just write a bit about this.
Yes.
You know, not necessarily, and I was on Dave Raven's show. It wasn't that long ago. You know, it's not that kind of thing, but just the experience.
And I saw a one-legged duck.
Yeah, and he doesn't give a monkeys. So, you know, I'm always writing experientially.
Yes.
I guess, you know.
Is it changing? Is your style, is your writing changing as you get older and more worldly wise? And
I think so, yeah. It's difficult for me to tell because it's all me. And I look at a bit of me and I go, well, that's me.
Yeah.
And I still feel, I'm in my 40s, but I don't feel it.
No, you never do.
I don't feel it at all. And if I sing a song like Don't Worry One, which is the first song I played for you tonight, I remember sitting on the bed in my mum and dad's house when I'd moved back there to save up money to be able to move south, or with this guitar, writing that song in, you know, April 2000. And I remember feeling that, like, if I write just the right number of words down and just the most persuasive style, then I'm not going to lose this relationship, you know. And I still feel like that about stuff today. So it's difficult for me to know where up and down the timeline it falls. Mm. But, I mean, I'm better at it. I'm better at it in that I have to be, because I'm not a teenager anymore. I'm not, you know, I have responsibilities. So where I've tightened up with Jenny's Place, it was all about discovering that I still cared enough to do it again. Mm. A Spindrift was recorded. And then I had my plans for my first solo album, Spindrift, was recorded just before my ex-wife got pregnant with my son. So it was all in the can and kind of about done, and then she went, oh, I'm pregnant. So that got put away, and then it didn't come out for years and years because I went off and was being a very attentive dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I dug that out a few years later, 5 years later, really. But Jenny's Place was like, wow, I can be bothered to do this, you know, and people care, you know. So this next one, several years of demos, mostly on my phone, you know, little bits on a voice recorder app of my phone, music recorder app on my phone, loads of lyrics all on my phone. Again, I've given up with pens.
Yeah.
I'm dreadful at writing stuff down.
But why would you when you've got that technology? It's just so good.
Steve Earle told me, I did a little workshop with Steve three years ago, where I really kind of kick-started the songwriting again, 2014 in America, New York. And he said when he got clean, because he came out of his treatment centre, that's when he gave up the pen. he said, I gave up any romantic notions that I had about being writing with a pen. He said, do you know why? He said, because I couldn't can read it.
Yeah.
So he started using the computer. So I came away with that. So I would have done that. So I never wrote anything down. And they never recorded anything because it wasn't in Abbey Road and it wasn't with a quill pen on a lovely... You know what I mean?
I do, yes.
Well, I'm just going to record this into my phone and I'm going to type this into here. And then at some point, when I need a new album, it's there. And I tell you, there's loads of great stuff. So I sat, and I've never done it this way around. Lots of people do this way around. But I've never sat with music and played with it and manipulated it to make it into songs. You know, yeah. I would be at a rehearsal, at a sound check, at home, whatever, and I just go, oh, I've got an idea, and most of them are about 40 seconds long, which is an intro, a verse, and a chorus.
And then
I didn't look at them for 2 years, but then funnily down the line, you know, like I'd end up writing the middle eight in the same key and I go, well, that's that. So I sat with it, put it all on the computer, and I made these really rough demos. Really, timekeeping isn't really that significant for me on it. It was just about marrying these bits together, and I did that just in kind of June. And then last month, I got in my little studio, got my drummer Darren Lee, and I put two mics up and had him come and play over the top. And so now I've got, of the first crop, there's like 17 backing tracks there.
Yeah.
And then when we were off, my wife's Swedish, so we got this house up in the north of Sweden. We were just there a couple of weeks ago, and I wrote all the words. So I sat with my headphones on, and I pulled together all of this stuff. And listening to it, so it's been a really, really productive use of the time. And, and up where we are up in Sweden, it's a bit like this, you know, there's river, you can always hear the water running, there's lots of greenery, there's nobody else around, you know. And I was really able to just kind of get under the skin of it. So I'm gonna actually this week, today was going to be the before you invited me up, today was the day I was going to start recording the vocals onto the tracks. And nobody will ever hear them except me and Darren, because they are that rough. They're really rough. But what I'll do is then, once I've got them in, we'll meet up with the producer, Al, and we'll choose which ones we're going to use, and then we'll start demo. Then we'll demo them again and start playing them. And then I'm going to America next year. I'm going to Alabama and Tennessee next April. A friend of mine is getting married, and I have another friend that lives in Alabama, lives in Birmingham, who's an amazing organist. Played with Jimmy Herring, played with Colonel Bruce Hampton, played with Rich Robinson from the Black Crowes. He's a friend of mine as well. So I'm going to book a couple of days in the studio, and I'm going to go and do some out there. And that's going to be the new album, which will probably come out in 2019. That's sounds very organised.
Doesn't it sound wonderful? Yeah.
Very confident. Very, I have no money for it.
Okay, what are you going to do for us next?
Well, I have no idea, actually, Dave. I'm sitting with this guitar around my neck. Okay.
You can take one of those raw demos and give it a bit of an airing, if it's worth it.
Oh, I don't have the words with me. This song's called Ran Through Here, and it's another one from Spindrift, my first album. Mm-hmm.
stop pushing, man. You know you keep pushing, but you keep pushing, gonna push me away. I'm lying, man, you know I keep trying, but I keep trying and it just doesn't change. I got nothing to say, nothing to do but look at you inside. Stop talking, man, you know you keep on talking, but you keep on talking when there ain't nothing to say. Cause I listen, man, you know I'm gonna listen, so you think that that's a reason to talk all day. I got nothing to say, nothing to do but look at you and say crying, cause I was sleeping. Well, it sound like a herd of those elephants ran through here. Quiet, cause I don't wanna hear you. I've been working all day and night, so won't you leave me be? It's y'all hurting, well, you say you've been hurting, well, big deal, cause I'm hurting too. What you gotta understand is that everybody's hurting, and everybody's hurting, yeah. Swear it's true, I got nothing to say, nothing to do but look at you and see you quiet, cause I was sleeping. Well, it sound like a herd of those elephants ran through here. Quiet, cause I don't wanna hear you. I've been working all day and night, so won't you leave me be? Nothing to say, nothing to do but look at you and see quiet, cause I was sleeping. Well, it sound like I heard those elephants ran through here. Quiet, cause I don't wanna hear you. I've been working all day and night, so won't you leave me be? Leave me be. Leave me be. Leave me be.
Mike Ross on the Raven of the Blues, and also on Facebook as well for a few brief seconds. I thought we'd do a bit of a live broadcast. In terms of the... obviously, all the music and everything else is planned for the next couple of years as best as you can. Is it kind of a... not so much world domination, but is there kind of something even beyond that, in a way? A time scale you've put down to say, if things haven't worked out the way I'd like them to be, that's the time when I'm going to become a plumber or whatever.
Yeah. Well, yeah. 5 years.
All right. You said that. Now we're, 2 years into it now, are we?
2.5 years into it.
Right, so it's a halfway point.
Two and a half years into it. And I said to, you know, what I haven't done is what I do not believe you need to do, which is pay somebody a load of money to tell everybody how great you are. I don't believe it works, you know, unless you've got millions. And then people just fade up, and then as soon as you stop spending that money, they disappear.
Yeah.
So, you know, what Joe Harmon was saying about an organic growth. I mean, she's got a marquee. That's her race in her pocket, you know. and good luck to them both. They're friends of mine, and I have a lot of tremendous amount of respect for the work that they've they've done on her career. And I wish you worked for me. But, you know, everything that I've done has been genuine and organic, if you like. I don't want to use that word again. But, you know, this is me, you know, sitting in front of this microphone with you now, this guitar. This is what I do. But this is, I bought this guitar when I was 16 years old. And, you know, just, I really enjoy just playing. I don't play this guitar like this anymore. But when I bought this guitar, it was the only acoustic guitar that I had. I played everything. It's a Regal Resonator guitar, folks. From San Francisco, California, and I bought it because Duane Allman had one, and
that's good enough reason.
Yeah. And you know, I'm lucky enough to have quite a few guitars nowadays. So I don't tend to play this one unless it's in a tuning.
Yeah.
It only comes out for to play in E tuning actually, but it really reminds me of when I was into writing these songs in the first time, you know. So what you get when you come and see me is me with this guitar or one like it, or you know. And I just play them and sing, and if you like it, then you might come back. You know, there's no art to, you know, there's no dark art to me persuading you to come or anything. It's all very hard on my sleeve.
So when you're doing a solo acoustic bit, is there a set list or you just sit there? There is.
Because I want to get more the songs in.
Yeah.
You know. For the the bad old days in inverted commas when I wasn't playing much. And I would do that, and I thought, I don't need a set list, because I don't want, you know, I want to know how I want to go with how it feels and all this airy fairy stuff, you know. And it basically means you spend half the set with your finger on your lip going,
trying to work out what I'm going to do now.
Like I did just now.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You know, and it worked out fine there, but you know, no, I write my set
lists. I could have cut that out, you see. I could have sort of said, what are you going to do for us next? And I could have cut out the gap.
Mm.
And
then, well, yeah, but...
Now I've got to leave it in.
You don't have to leave it in. I mean, you could decide how long that gap is.
We'll leave it in, yeah.
But, no, I don't now. You see, because I work with a band of people that are busy.
Yeah.
You know, predominantly my band is Darren Lee on drums, Stevie Watts on organ. And if Stevie Watts isn't available, we've got Lindsay Oliver. She plays bass guitar for us. So, you know, they're busy guys.
Mm.
We don't rehearse once a week or once a month or hardly ever. So what I do is, when I get home this afternoon, I'm writing my set list for Colm.
Mm.
I've got the Blues Kitchen tomorrow night, and then I have another one down in Arundel on Friday, and then the two Colm gigs this weekend. So I'll email those set lists to Steve and Darren. And Steve will learn the songs, and Darren will just come and play them because he's played them loads. But no, I do it then, and I'll do Mondays as well probably, because I know which songs go together well.
Yeah,
I've been playing, you know, probably averagely three nights a week for the last 18 months, I'd say.
Which in this business is pretty good.
Well, that's me as a result of not saying no to anything.
Yeah.
So if something's, you know, profitable or if it's not or whatever, everything has a profit if you're using it.
Yeah.
You know, and for me, you know, tomorrow night I'm going to Camden. I don't start at 11:15. It's not a great fee.
No.
You know, but it's a gig.
It's a good venue, though,
It's a good venue, yeah, but it's absolutely pitch black. I took my own lights last week. I played there with Walrus last week. I got told off. Because it's supposed to be dark and red in there. But anyway, you know, my experience of that tomorrow night will be it's another airing of songs that I think will work great in that venue.
Mm.
So, you know, everything has its profit, provided you're using what it gives you. You know, if you're just going and phoning them in and getting your 120 quid and nicking off home, you know, then there's no point.
Yeah.
But everything's developmental. So whereas I used to, you know, write with a pen, record in a studio, used to write set lists and all that kind of stuff, and I did no work.
Yeah.
These days, I've used every tool that I've got at my disposal to be as efficient as possible at all times, and I'm really busy, and my career's going really well, and my singing's better than it ever has been, my playing's better than it ever has been.
Well, that's because you're using it all the time.
Using it all the time.
I mean, so, it's it's so important. You mentioned sort of 3 gigs a week, almost every week in the last 18 months. You look at some band gig lists on their websites and it's got like one in September and one in November and then a couple in next spring. I was looking at Junko Partners, a band out the northeast out of Newcastle, who were around, they became the house band after the Animals had left the Agogo and become famous. And so the Junko Partners took over as house band. And so they were part of my life through the 60s, worked with them a lot on various stages. And one of the members of the band had put up their gig lists from back in the 60s. And they were working every night. Yeah, that was the way it used to be, you know.
You could, because there weren't so many distractions, were there?
That's true, you know. Yeah. A handful of clubs, working men's clubs, and that was it, yeah.
You went to the discotheque to have a dance. You didn't, you know, you didn't put a DJ on in the pub.
No.
The music on in the bar, coffee bars, you know, and lots of places where, you know, kind of social clubs and scout huts and things like that. You see, like Hendrix's gig list for 1966, and he's playing some places. You think, really, is he doing that? You know, what was it? The Allman Brothers. I've just read Galadriel Allman's Brothers. Oh, Galadriel Allman's book. I don't know if you've read it. If anybody else has ever read it, but it's so sweet and so sad.
No, I haven't. No.
It's so sad. She's just searching for her dad. You know, through the pages of this book. So I highly recommend it if you're into the Allman Brothers.
Yes,
You know, it's so. It's really sad. But it's beautiful. But you know, they were doing two shows a day. That Fillmore East album, 1971. There was a 7 o'clock show and an 11 o'clock show. You know, and it went on for days. You know, and that's just a snapshot. And then they got back in the Winnebago and the bus and whatever. And then they went back to Atlanta via, you know, 7 other cities.
Yes.
And they're doing two shows a night. So it's no wonder this kind of stuff was done. Yeah. So, you know, I can't replicate that in today's, you know, climate or whatever. Yeah. But I'm bloody going to play as much as I can and make sure that every note counts. You know.
For people to find out where you are playing and to get copies of your albums, website is?
Yeah, it's www.mikerossmusic.co.uk.
What are you going to finish with?
I'm going to finish with an Aretha Franklin song. We mentioned the Allman Brothers earlier on, and increasingly it's becoming accepted, actually, but Muscle Shoals, Alabama, where the Allmans recorded, or Dwayne recorded, where there's so much great stuff down there, you know. Criteria Studios was where Layla was recorded, you know, all those musicians. There's a very special air down there, and I'm really looking forward to going there next year. And this is from some of the sessions that were done down there with the Swampers. Which was an all-white backing band, and I don't have any significance of that other than there was a tension between Aretha's husband and the band.
Right.
So they were really, all of them had something to prove.
Yes.
You know, they really had something to prove. And this is a song from one of those sessions, and it's on Jenny's Place where we recorded it. It didn't sound anything like Aretha's version, but it's called "Baby, I Love You."
If you want my loving, if you really do, said don't be afraid, just ask me. No, I'm gonna give it to you. Oh, what you want, you know that you got it. I would deny myself before I think to see you without it. I love you, girl. There ain't no doubt about it. I love you. I said I love you, love you. I love you, I love you, baby, I do. If you feel like you wanna kiss me, cause I don't mind. And all you gotta do is just snap your fingers, and I'll come a running. I ain't gonna lie. Oh, what you want? You know that you got it. I would deny myself before I faint. See you without it. I love you, girl. No doubt about it, baby, I love you. I said I love you, love you, I love you, baby.
love you. Yes, I do. Someday you might want to run away. You leave me sitting here to cry. But if it's all the same to you, honey, I'm gonna stop you from saying goodbye. Cousin, baby, I love you. Sitting here to cry, but if it's all the same to you, honey, I'm gonna stop you from saying goodbye, 'cause baby I love, and there ain't no doubt about it, baby I love you. I said I love you, love you, I love you, I love. I said I love.